Thank you. Very good. Thank you. Thank you. Is that working okay? Yeah. Up a little? Okay.
Raise it up. Raise it up. So, can you just stand there?
Gotcha. That should be about right. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be sharing time with you all and to be able to read on a bill with Deborah and with Judy. And so I shall begin. Joan mentioned my book, Spring Mills, came out this year. Spring Mills is a very small town in central Pennsylvania, almost like smack dab in the middle of the state. There might be 500 people living there. My father grew up there. And I'm going to read from the title poem, Spring Mills, which is dated Memorial Day, 1943. Pardon me, it'll help. And at 17, my father had a silver cornet and blue light stirred behind his eyes. He stepped out behind the slide trombones, march tempo, six abreast, six pair of spats, sparkling white on spit shine, Sunday shoes, row on row of legs, draped in royal blue, striped with gold, 120 steps a minute to the rattle of the snare down Main Street. The music is proud, Sousa, and my father swells with breath beneath brass buttons, mouthpiece pressed to lips, triple tonguing, double forte, bright notes burst into the air of crystalline afternoon, lilac-scented spring. In from the fields on holiday, a corridor of eyes and smiles, calloused hands clapping as the band steps by. These kids sound good, don't they? His silver horn sings out legato over Penns Creek, where it curves under the wobbly footbridge by the fire hall. Stars and stripes ripple from the flagpole at the post office. An old willow leans over the water, strand after strand of green tears. A red-winged blackbird screeches, lifts into the breeze, epaulets splashing scarlet as it flaps across the creek to the ball field like a young man crossing the sea to war. Also from Spring Mills, this is called The Trouble with Love. The trouble with love, says a friend of mine, is you give it an inch, it takes you dancing, takes you to lunch and the cleaners, takes you where your mother said, don't go, and your father went and came home begging forgiveness. The trouble with love is ice cracks, earth howls when love arrives, like a crocus in spring, if it could cry with joy as it heaves toward light, open the windows. Love is the best drug there is. The trouble with love is hit the road, Jack. You're an empty sack. To be alive is to lose the world like Bonaparte alone on that high shelf of the fire escape where you look down at your feet and think the trouble with love is a wild white flag, deer in a distant snowfield, flashing, gone, bloodhound sniffing a scorched trail into the tangled heartland where there is no trail, blue hole in a cold blue sky under a flat stone. You find a note you once wrote to yourself. It says, the trouble with love. And I have another book almost ready to go. It's called About Time. And oh yes, this is a supermarket in Pittsburgh. So many of you know a famous poem by Allen Ginsberg, pretty famous as poems go, called A Supermarket in California, and has Walt Whitman appear as Allen Ginsberg. The first person is wandering through the aisles of the grocery store. A supermarket in Pittsburgh. My pirate's hat with the big yellow P on top stands today for pissed off, petulant poet, me, in mirror-tinted dark glasses, searching up and down the aisles for seltzer water and extra firm tofu, absorbed in my tired spirit, dodging every familiar face, my neighbor, the amiable racist, my ex-wife's best friend, our lady of the benevolent smile. Where are you today, Walt Whitman? Lonely, graybeard, wordmonger, courage, teacher, made of only in America grit and nourishing green fiber. I'm a pair of ragged claws, scuttling toward the take a number, please, dispenser to take a stand for ham, thin sliced, shaved and shriveled into grease spots on butcher's paper. I'm ready for checkout and want my last rites to be a taste of these strawberries and those tomatoes. Vine ripened, says the sign, actually smell like tomatoes, like my mother's garden, August. Fiery red fat slices on fresh bread with pepper, black flakes from a grinder, acrid dark from the earth, sweet tarragon, mustard, a smear of horseradish. Life, you have your moments. I'll give you that as I savor this imaginary sandwich. But please don't ask me to talk with anyone until I've chewed and swallowed every bite. I often find myself writing about music one way or another. So a little pop quiz. Dan always accuses, my friend Jan Hamilton always accuses me of doing pop quizzes. Who knows who Wilhelm Furtwängler was? A couple. One, two, two hands.
That's all right.
I'll tell you. Okay, good one, Jay. Yes, he was conductor of the Berlin Philharmonic during the lead up and through World War II into the 1950s. He was controversial because he stayed and didn't leave, like many artists and famous people in Germany did, who could, and he could have. And he, many people felt he allowed himself to be used by the Third Reich, because he basically toured around Europe leading the orchestra. But there's also this side of Furtwängler, from a man whose name sounds like a sausage machine. You don't expect greatness. Furtwängler might be a cast iron food grinder with an oak handled crank. Maybe you'd find one in Munich, 1933, a beer hall teeming with noisy men in brush mustaches, lederhosen, and Tyrolean hats like Chico Marx wore. In doorways and at long tables on benches, they're hoisting steins and singing about someone named Horst. The Horst Wessel song is a Nazi song. The day will come for revenge. No forgiveness, they roar, when Heil and Sieg will ring through the fatherland. Furtwängler, lanky and long in a tie and dark suit, too big for him, arms waving like a huge bird whose wings lift on spiritual light and set orchestras on fire with music. Can you, with what you know, imagine what he felt that day, 1935, tapping his baton to the Berlin Phil, as if to say, ready, let's play Beethoven on my downbeat. And he raised no salute of any kind, meets for you know who in front beside Goebbels, while everyone stood and heiled Kurt Wangler. To me now, he's like a cowboy or gangster in a movie, whipping in the face of death, but it was real. I have a 4th of July poem here. Here it is. It's called July 5th. This is the holiday coming up. My grandfather named Harry, when I was young and he was around the house a lot, every year as the 4th of July was coming around, he had this saying, which I've never heard from anyone else. He who goes forth with a fifth on the fourth may not come forth on the fifth. Very poetic. Free espresso Monday is one way to crank the starter of happily lazy neurons. Morning after the fourth, last night's thunder still ringing the anvil of my inner ear, burnt powder tingle in the nostrils. Red zephyrs to the stars and cascades of jade crystal, as if from the hand of a god who can't sleep and wanders into the kitchen of the oldest part of night to make a sandwich. Such is the movie in my mind as afternoon arrives and shadows jitter the floor of Daniel Boone's forest, Jeff's cabin, Kentucky wind through leafy arms of copper beech, white oak, yellow poplar, black squirrel tails twitch into question marks as acorn bombs rattle the grooved tin roof, a ruby flash of minuscule pterodactyl at the nectar dispenser. Helicopters of birdland, my friend Trudy called them, seventh grade, her biology paper that made her famous in a pleasantly Ohio small pond way. I too hover at the feeder, listen, purple scratch marks scatter from my uniball microvision. Oh boy. My friend Jan Hamilton, who's seated right here, we visited Prague for about 10 days or so, a few years ago now. And so we learned some things about what many of us know as the Velvet Revolution, and it's called the Velvet Revolution, yes, in part because it was less violent than many other revolutions. But the main reason the Czechs call it the Velvet Revolution is because there was a rock band called the Velvet Underground from New York City that was the model for a group of musicians in Prague at that time called Plastic People of the Universe. I'm not making this up. And what triggered the ultimate takedown of the Soviet regime was this group of kids, Plastic People of the Universe, who were mainly the children of middle class and bourgeois citizens of Prague, had rock music parties. Rock music was illegal. It seems amazing, but it was even illegal to own Beatle records. It was contraband material. You could go to jail for having rock music in your apartment. And so these kids were arrested and went to jail, and then people started protesting, and that was really the large part of the momentum. So this for the overturning of the Soviet government. This is called Plastic People, Velvet Prague. It's a Dada tribute. It's a very Dada poem. You'll hear to Vaclav Havel and Tom Stoppard's rock and roll. Tom Stoppard grew up in Prague, and his play Rock and Roll depicts some of that era when the revolution was happening. A lot of background here. Plastic People of the Universe, one of their songs had a refrain. I'm not making this up either. It goes, "Peace, piece of toilet paper." So I borrowed that for this poem. Red velvet cake in South Carolina is an almost sickly sweet way to say rebellion. Velvet on the antlers of white-tailed deer is a growth hormone. Bluer than velvet is the night, sings Bobby Vinton, when I'm in high school and Jessica in a night blue velvet dress shows me how to slow dance. The Velvet Underground in New York City with John Cale's viola on Sweet Jane is the dive bomb scream of a Stuka, 250 kilograms of heaven-sent oblivion. Submit, says the Wehrmacht, or welcome your velvet death. Shiny, shiny boots of leather. Imagine there's no heaven, sings John Lennon. There is no heaven, says the other Lennon. In Prague, Plastic People of the Universe say peace, piece of toilet paper. In Soviet Prague, toilet paper is recycled, single ply, unbleached brown. Dialecticians of ideology produce slogans on posters that are like velvet ropes to guide us into the good buddy club of the proletariat. Workers unite for peace and freedom, nice slogan. People tend to pretend lies are true and to feel that to exist is better than not to. One stubborn grocer, one awakened spirit will do, says Havel, to refuse pretense. People start to know themselves again. John Lennon is acquainted with the touch of a velvet hand like a lizard on a window pane. The other Lennon likes to kiss with an iron fist in a velvet glove. In Prague, Plastic People of the Universe say peace, piece of toilet paper. Meanwhile, capitalist toilet paper is two-ply, white and soft almost as velvet lips that kissed me into light. Black velvet drapes, five horses harnessed in gold trappings to the hearse of the Winter King, Henry VII, who with spies and meticulous parchment keeps score on the velvet-clad merchants and nobles he holds up for loot with rigged courts and clammy cells. History, river of time and strange fortune, carries marks to Prague. Injustice is a social disease. Nice slogan. Velveeta cheese rhymes with please. Plastic People of the Universe say peace, piece of toilet paper. Let's have a wedding, says Magor of the Plastic People. The parasites and hooligans will come. That's what they were arrested for, being parasites and hooligans. love, says Zappa. They loved Zappa in the Eastern Bloc even more than most of the other American rock musicians because Zappa had no pretense about what lefty communist totalitarianism was about and often spoke about it. Love, says Zappa, will never be a product of plasticity. Show me someone not a parasite and I'll say a prayer for him, says Zimmerman. The wedding march goes through a tunnel of velvet truncheons, velvet students' blood flows. Imagine all the people, says John Lennon, exhausted with exhaustion, tired of being tired. Bureaucracy is shit, says the other Lennon, afraid of old people who remember and young people with typewriters. From trial and jail in Prague, plastic people of the universe say, piece of toilet paper. Good King Wenceslas went out, and from the grand iron-railed balcony of what's now Marks and Spencer's department store, no relation to Carl or Herbert in Prague's grandest public square, hovel, released from Ruzyn prison and pneumonia, shakes and rattles his car keys for a couple hundred thousand Czechs and Slovaks, after which Salgovic, Ubina, Kolder, Indra, and Bilak of the Politburo scamper like mice to Moscow, done with Dada pranksters who play Zappa and velvet-flavored rock and roll. Thank you, Elvis, says John Lennon to the king of musical revolution, his face always easy to find, hands painted on black velvet. Help, I need somebody else, says the other Lennon, too late in Prague. Plastic people of the universe say peace, piece of toilet paper.
That was fun. Okay.
Things are. My most recent poems are in a chapel called Many Hats. There, all these poems are hats like bowler, pork pie, soap pipe, pillbox, beret, fedora, things like that. So I'm going to read one of these I hadn't planned on reading, but I'm inspired by Judy's poem about the fox skull. And this is for my grandmother, whose name was Nona, and it's called Trapper. My grandparents, my mother's parents, were fluent in German. I loved how those furry flaps flipped down and chin strapped warmed my ears. Trapper's is the kind of hat that has those flaps on it. Maybe it was rabbit fur, the real thing, as Grandma Nona said, from a German hare, same big-eared bunny, Albrecht Dürer, rendered with nearly scientific whiskered strokes of rabbitness. In art books, if you look closely, its nose twitches, and you hear, what's up, Doc? From those quasi-wabbit Looney Tunes. Among small mammals, Nona favored fox, like the red fur in her bedroom closet. When Harry wouldn't shut up about Stuttgart after the war, which was often, she'd drape that ghastly russet orange pelt across her shoulders, flap its tail, and waltz about two-headed, one with a vulpine snout, fervid eyes, a face that might any minute flash gleaming incisors and breach the nearest hen house. In that freaky stole, she'd become bewitching high bourgeois Frau Detweiler. Guten Tag, Herr Schneider, she'd say to me. Sprechen Sie? Nein, that was all I knew to say. Nein, Fräulein, an answer to which she'd object. Ich bin kein Fräulein, ich bin ein Frau. Hardly at all did I appreciate why that mattered as much as it did. She was reminding herself that she was a married woman. And that meant a lot, especially in Germany in that period of time. Okay, I'm going to close with Boston Jack. Boston Jack is a kind of hat, dark felt, you could call Celtic Stetson, useful to cover your noggin, as your mother, if she was like mine, said once or twice as you stepped out the door. Where was I going? January, God's icy breath smacked my face, frigid air chewed the rim of my ears. To deliver the news, good and bad, in print, still warm from the press, to the hardy people of Main Street, my hometown to respectfully knock on doors and say, collecting, to drop coins into my drawstring sack and jangle them, silver half dollars with Ben Franklin in bas relief profile, noble George Washington quarters, Liberty dimes, Buffalo nickels, Abe Lincoln shiny copper pennies. I'd count and pack them into wrappers, proudly forming hot dog shaped cylinders of heavy metal. I'd lift and hold in my rolled up young fist as if to make thunder and lightning like Thor, money, mine, to take downtown and deposit at Farmers National Bank. People called this growing up. It was bound to happen. It takes a village. You need a hat. Thank you very much.